live on the cusp between the world of the living and the world of the dead, at the edge of the underworld. Of course, the boundary was gone now. It should be safe here now. He wondered what else was going on that she wasn't telling him. Sorceresses never told all they knew. What was she doing still living here with strange and dangerous things happening? Stubborn women, sorceresses, the lot of them. Addie limped slightly as she walked across the room lit only by the fire.
Light the lamp?
Following behind, Zed swept a hand in the direction of the table. The lamp lit itself, adding a soft glow to that of the fire in the large hearth made of smooth river stones, and helped illuminate the dark walls of the room. Every wall held white bones. Shelves lined one wall and were stuffed to overflowing with the skulls of dangerous beasts. Many of the bones had been made into ceremonial objects. Some had been made into necklaces, decorated with feathers and beads, and some had been inscribed with ancient symbols. Some had spells drawn on the wall around them. It was the oddest collection he had ever seen. Zed pointed a bony finger down at her foot.
"Why are you limping?"
Addie gave him a sidelong glance as she stopped and lifted a spoon from a hook set into the mortar at the side of the fireplace.
"The new foot you grew me, be too short."
Zed stood with one hand on a knobby hip and the stick-like fingers of the other holding his smooth chin as he looked down at her foot. He hadn't noticed it wasn't long enough when he had grown it back. He had needed to leave soon after it was done.
"Maybe I could grow the ankle a little longer,"
he wondered aloud. He took his hand from his chin and flourished it in the air.
"Make them even."
Addie glared over her shoulder as she stirred the stew.
"No, thank you."
Zed arched an eyebrow.
"Wouldn't you appreciate having them both even? I appreciate you growing my foot back for me. Life be easier with two of them. I did not realize how much I hated that crutch, but the foot be fine the way it is."
She lifted the long-handled spoon to her lips, blowing on the hot stew.
"It would be easier if they were even." "I said no."
She tasted the stew.
"Bags, woman, why not?"
Addie tapped the spoon clean on the edge of the iron kettle and hung it back on its hook, then lifted a dented tin from the side of the mantel, unscrewing the lid. Her voice was quiet, her rasp softer.
"I do not wish to revisit that pain. Had I known what it would be like, I would have chosen to live the rest of my life without the foot."
Reaching her hand into the tin, she took a three-finger-and-thumb pinch of five spice and flung it into the stew. Zed tugged at his ear. Perhaps she was right. Growing the foot back for her had nearly killed her. He hadn't expected what had happened, her reaction to his using that much magic on her. Still, he had been successful and managed to draw away the pain of the memories, though he still didn't know what they had been about. But he should have taken into account that she could have had memories that held that much pain. He should have taken the wizard's second rule into account, but he had been intent on doing something good for her. That was the way it worked with the second rule. It was usually hard to tell if you were violating it.
"You know the price of magic, Addie, almost as well as a wizard. And besides, I made it up to you, for the pain, I mean."
He knew it wouldn't take as much magic to make the ankle longer as it had to grow the foot back, but after what she had suffered, he could understand her reluctance.
"Perhaps you are right. Maybe I have done enough."
Her white eyes settled on him again.
"Why be you here, wizard?"
He gave her an impish grin.
"I wanted to see you. You are a hard woman to forget, and I wanted to tell you about Darkenrall being defeated by Richard. That we won."
He frowned at her stare.
"Why do you think the Grippers are coming here?"
She shook her head with a sigh.
"You talk like a drunk man walks in every direction but where he be headed."
She flicked a finger toward the table, indicating that she wanted him to get the bowls.
"I already knew we won. The first day of winter has come and passed. Had Rawl won, things wouldn't be so peaceful as they are, though I be pleased to see your bones again."
Her voice lowered, becoming even more raspy.
"Why you be here, wizard?"
He strode over to the table, glad to elude the scrutiny of those eyes for a moment.
"You didn't answer my question. Why do you think the Grippers are coming here?"
Her voice lowered into a deeper, harsher rasp, bordering on anger.
I think the Grippers be here for the same reason you be here, to cause an old woman trouble.
Zed grinned as he returned with bowls.
My eyes don't see an old woman. They see only a handsome woman.
She regarded his grin with a helpless shake of her head.
I fear your tongue be more dangerous than a Gripper.
He handed her a bowl.
Have the Grippers ever come here before?
No. She turned and began spooning stew into the bowl.
When the boundary be in place, the Gripper stayed in the pass with other beasts. After the boundary went down, I not see them for a time, but when winter came, so did the Grippers. That not be right. I think something be wrong.
He exchanged the empty bowl for the full, holding it to his nose and inhaling the aroma.
Maybe when the boundary finally failed, there was no longer any hold over them, and they simply came out of the pass.
Maybe.
When the boundary failed, most of the beasts went with it, back into the underworld. Some were freed of their bonds and escaped into the surrounding country. I never saw any Grippers until the winter came, nearly a month ago. I fear something else has happened for them to be here.
Zed knew very well what had happened, but didn't say so. Instead, he asked,
Addie, why don't you leave? Come away with me to Aidendrill. It would be now.
Her mouth snapped closed. She seemed almost surprised by her own voice. She smoothed her robe with her hand, letting the anger leave her face, and then took the spoon out of the hand with the bowl and returned to dishing out stew.
No. This be my home.
Zed watched silently as she worked over the kettle. When finished, she carried her bowl to the table, set it down, and retrieved a loaf of bread from over the counter, from a shelf behind a blue and white striped curtain. She pointed with the bread to the other empty chair. Zed set his bowl on the table and sat, hiking his robes up as he folded his legs underneath himself. Addie lowered herself into the chair opposite him and sliced off a chunk of bread, using the knife point to push it across the table before she looked up to meet his eyes.
Please, Zed, do not ask me to leave my home. I am only worried for you, Addie.
Addie dunked a chunk of bread in her stew.
That be a lie.
He looked up from under his eyebrows as he picked up his bread.
It's not a lie.
She ate without lifting her head.
Only be a lie.
Zed went back to his stew and ate in earnest.
Mmm, this is wonderful,
he mumbled around a hot chunk of meat. She nodded her thanks. He ate until his bowl was empty, then took it to the fireplace and filled it once more. On his way back to the table, he swept his hand around the room, pointing with his spoon.
You have a lovely home, Addie. Quite lovely.
He sat and picked up the bread she passed to him. He put his elbows on the table, his sleeves slipping up his forearms as he broke the bread in half.
But I don't think you should be living here all alone, not with the Grippers and all.
He gestured with the bread to the north.
Why don't you come with me to Aidendrill? It's a lovely place, too. You would like it there. There's plenty of room. Caelan could see to it you have your choice of places to live. Why, you could even stay at the keep if you preferred.
Her white eyes stayed on her meal.
No. Why not? We could have a good time there. A sorceress could have a grand time in the keep. There are books, and I said no.
He watched her as she went back to eating stew. He pushed his sleeves up farther and did the same. He couldn't eat long. He set the spoon in the bowl and looked up from under his eyebrows.
Addie, there is more to the story, more I haven't told you.
She lifted an eyebrow.
I hope you do not expect me to look surprised. I not be good at pretending.
She bent back over her bowl.
Addie, the veil is torn.
Her hand paused with the spoon halfway to her mouth. She didn't look up.
Bah! What do you know of the veil? You do not know what you speak of.
The spoon completed its journey.
I know it's torn.
She scooped up the last piece of potato from her bowl.
You speak of things that are not possible, wizard. The veil not be torn.
She stood, picking up her empty bowl.
Be at ease, old man. If the veil be torn, we would have a lot more than Grippers to be worried about, but we don't.
Zed turned, putting a hand on the back of his chair, watching her limp toward the kettle hanging from the crane in the fireplace.
"The Stone of Tears is in this world," he said in a quiet voice.
Addie halted. Her bowl fell to the floor, clattering in the thick silence, and rolled away. Her hands were held out before her, as if she still held it. Her back was stiff.
"Do not say such a thing aloud," she whispered, "unless you be certain beyond doubt, unless you be certain on your honor as first wizard, unless you be willing to offer your soul to the Keeper if you be lying."
Zed's fierce hazel eyes watched her back.
"I pledge my soul to the Keeper if I'm telling you a lie. May he take me this instant. The Stone of Tears is in this world. I have seen it."
"Dear spirits, protect us," she whispered weakly.
Still, she did not move.
"Tell me what fool thing you have done, wizard."
"Addie, come and sit down. First, I want you to tell me what you were doing living here in the pass, or what used to be the pass. What you have been doing living at the edge of the underworld, and why you won't leave."
She spun to face him, one hand gripping the skirt of her robe.
"That be my business."
With his hand on the chair back, Zed pushed himself to his feet.
"Addie, I must know. This is important. I must know what you have been doing, so that I may know if it can be a help. I know very well the pain you live with. I saw it, remember? I don't know what caused it, but I know how deep it is. I would ask you to share the story with me. I ask you as a friend to confide in me. Please don't make me ask as first wizard."
Her eyes rose to meet his at the last of what he said. The flash of anger faded, and she nodded.
"Very well. Perhaps I have kept it to myself too long. Perhaps it would be a relief to tell someone, a friend. Perhaps you will not want my help after you hear. If you still do, I expect you to tell me all that has happened."
She thrust a finger in his direction.
"All."
Zed gave her a small smile of encouragement.
"Of course."
She limped to her chair. Just as she sat down, the largest skull on the shelves suddenly thudded to the floor. Both stared at it. Zed walked over and picked it up in both hands. His thin fingers stroked tapered, curved fangs as long as his hand. The skull was flat on the bottom. It shouldn't have been able to roll off the shelf. He replaced it solidly as Addie watched.
"It seems," she said in her rasp, "that the bones want to be on the floor lately. They keep falling down."
Zed returned to his chair after a final frown to the skull.
"Tell me about the bones. Why you have them. What you do with them. Everything. Start at the beginning."
"Everything."
She folded her arms across her lap, briefly looking as if she wanted to run for the door.
"It be a painful story to tell."
"Not a word of it will ever touch my lips, Addie."
Chapter 22 Addie drew a long breath.
"I be born in the town of Chura, in the land of Nicobarisi. My mother did not have the gift of sorcery. She be a skip, as it be called. My grandmother Lindell be the one before me to have it. My mother be grateful to the good spirit, she be a skip, but bitter at them that I be gifted. In Nicobarisi, those with a gift be loathed and distrusted. It be thought the gift be allied to the flows of power not only from the Creator but also from the Keeper. Even ones using the gift for good be suspected of being a baneling. You know of the banelings, yes?"
Zed tore off a piece of bread.
"Yes. Ones turn to the Keeper, sworn to him. They hide in the light as well as the shadows, serving his wishes, working to his ends. They can be anyone. Some work for good for years, hiding, waiting to be called. But when they are called, they do the Keeper's bidding. They are also called by different names, but they are all agents of the Keeper. Some books call them that, agents. Some are important people, like Dark and Rawl, used for important tasks. Some are everyday people used for dirty little deeds. Those with the gift, like Arkenrall, are the most difficult for the Keeper to turn. Those without it are easier, but even they are rare.
Addie's eyes widened.
Darkenrall be a baneling?
Zed lifted an eyebrow as he nodded.
Admitted it to me himself. He said he was an agent, but it's the same thing. Whatever the word, and I've heard any number, they all serve the Keeper. This be dangerous news.
Zed sopped up some stew with a piece of bread.
I bring very little of any other kind. You were saying about your grandmother Lindell? In the time of Grandmother Lindell's youth, sorceresses be put to death for anything that fate brought. Sickness, accident, stillbirths. Put to death wrongly for being banelings. Some of the gifted fought back at being wrongly persecuted. They fought well. It deepened the hatred, and only served to confirm the fears of many of the Nicobarese people. At last there was a truce. Nicobarese leaders agreed to let the gifted women be, if they would give a soul oath as a way of proving they not be banelings, an oath not to use their power unless permission be granted by a governing body, the king's circle of their town, for instance. It be an oath to the people, an oath not to use the gift, and bring the Keeper's notice.
Zed swallowed a mouthful of stew.
Why would people think sorceresses were banelings? Because it'd be easier to blame a woman for their troubles than to admit the truth, and more satisfying to accuse than to curse the unknown. Those with the gift use power that can help people, but it can also be used to harm them. Because it can be used to harm, it'd be believed the power must be given at least in part by the Keeper. Superstitious nonsense, he growled. As you well know, superstition needs no grounding in truth, but once rooted, it grows a strong, though twisted tree.
He grunted his assent.
So no sorceress used her power?
Addie shook her head.
No, unless it be for some common good. And they went before the king's circle of their town first and asked permission. Every sorceress went before the circle of their town or district and swore an oath to the people, an oath on her soul, to abide by the wishes of the people. Swore a solemn oath not to use her power on or for another, unless asked to do so by the agreement of the circle.
Zed put his spoon down in disgust.
But they had the gift. How could they not use it? They used it, but only in private. Never where anyone could see, and never on another.
Zed leaned back in his chair, shaking his head in silent wonder at the wizard's first rule, at the things people would believe, while Addie went on.
Grandmother Lindell be a stern old woman who lived by herself. She never wanted anything to do with teaching me about using the gift. She told me only to let it be. And my mother, of course, could teach me nothing. So I learned on my own as I grew, as the gift grew. But I knew very well the wickedness of using it. I be lectured on that almost every day. To use the gift in a manner not permitted was made to seem like touching the taint of the Keeper himself, and I believed it so. I feared greatly going against what I be taught. I be a fruit of the tree of that superstition. One day, when I be 8 or 9, I be in the town square with my mother and father on market day, and across the square, a building caught on fire. There be a girl about my age on the second floor, trapped by the flames. She screamed for help. No one could reach her because the fire be all through the first floor. Her screams of terror burned every nerve in me. I started to cry. I wanted to help. I could not stand the screams.
Addie folded her hands in her lap and looked down at the table.
I made the fire to go out. The girl be saved.
Zed watched her placid expression as she stared at the table.
I don't suppose anyone except the girl and her parents were happy?
Addie shook her head.
Everyone knew I had the gift. They knew it be me who had done it. My mother stood and cried. My father just stood looking the other way. He would not look at me, at an agent of the Keeper's evil.
Someone went for Grandmother Lindell. She was respected because of how she stood by the oath. When Grandmother Lindell came, she took me and the girl before the men of the King's Circle. Grandmother Lindell switched the girl, who I saved. She bawled a good long time.
Zed was incredulous.
She beat the girl. Why?
For letting the keeper use her to bring forth the use of the gift.
Eddie sighed.
The girl and I had known each other. We had been friends of a sort. She never spoke to me again.
Eddie hugged her arms across her stomach.
And then Grandmother Lindell stripped me naked in front of those men and switched me until I was covered with welts and blood. I screamed more than the girl had in the fire. Then she marched me naked and bloody through the town to her house. The humiliation be worse than the beating. When we got to her house, I asked how she could be so cruel. She looked down her nose at me, looked at me with that puckered, angry face of hers, and said, "Cruel, child, cruel. You got not one switch more than you deserved, and not one less than what it took to keep you from being put to death by those men." Then she made me give the oath. I swear on my hope of salvation never to use the gift on another for any reason without the permission of the king or one of his circles, and upon forfeit of my soul to the keeper, should I ever use the gift to harm another. And then she shaved my head bald. I be kept bald until I grew to the age of a woman.
Bald? Why?
Because in the Midlands, as you know, the length of a woman's hair shows her social standing. It be meant to show me and everyone else that there be no one lower than I. I had used the gift, publicly, without permission. It be a constant reminder of the wrong I had done. I lived with Grandmother Lindell from then on. I only rarely saw my mother and father. At first I missed them greatly. Grandmother Lindell taught me how to use the gift, so I would be able to know it well. To be able to know what I was not to do. I did not like Grandmother Lindell much. She be a cold woman. But I respected her. She be fair after a fashion. If she punished me, and she did, it be only because I broke her rules. She switched me hard, but only for an infraction I be warned of. She taught me. She guided me in the gift, but she never gave me a kindness. It be a hard life, but I learned discipline. Most of all, I learned to use the gift. For that, I will always be thankful to her. For that be my life. The gift be touching something higher, something more noble than what I be.
I'm sorry, Eddie.
He started eating his cold stew because he didn't know what else to do. He wasn't hungry anymore. Eddie rose from her chair and walked to the fireplace, staring into the flames for a time. Zed waited silently for her to find the words.
After I reach the age of a woman, I be allowed to let my hair grow.
She smiled a small smile.
At that age, as I filled into my form, I be thought an attractive woman.
Zed pushed the bowl of stew away and went to stand by her, putting a hand on her shoulder.
No less attractive now, dear lady.
She put a hand over his without looking from the flames.
In time I fell in love with a young man. His name be Pell. He be an awkward young man, but a good and noble man, and he be kindness itself to me. He would have brought me the ocean, one spoonful at a time, if he thought it would please me. I thought the sun rose to show me his face, and the moon came out to let me taste his lips. Every beat of my heart be for him. We wanted to be wed. The king's circle of Chura, led by a man named Mathrin Gallien, had other ideas.
She took her hand away and gripped a knot of robes at her stomach.
They had decided I was to be wed to a man from the next town, the son of their mayor. I was a prize to the people of Chura. Having a sorceress bonded to a people by her oath was seen as a sign of the virtue of those people. To give me to an important man from a larger town was cause for excitement, joy, expectation. It would seal our towns in many ways. not the least of which was valuable trade. I be in a panic. I went to Grandmother Lindo and begged her to intercede for me. I told her of my love for Pell and that I did not wish to be a prize in return for trade. I told her the gift was mine and not to be used to bind me into slavery. A sorceress not be a slave. Grandmother Lindell was a sorceress. The gift in her be disdained, but people respected her because she be devoted to her oath, and they held more than a healthy respect for her. She be feared. I pleaded for her help.
Doesn't seem like the kind of person to help you.
There be no one else to turn to. She made me leave her for one day so she could think on it. It be the longest day of my life. When I came to her at the end of the day, she told me to kneel before her and give the oath. She told me I had better mean it more than any time I had ever said it before. And she made me say it often. I knelt and I said the oath, meaning every word. When I finished, I held my breath and waited. I still be on my knees. She looked down her nose at me, that sour frown of hers still on her face. And then she said, "Though you be wild of spirit, child, you have worked to tame it. The people have asked for your oath, and you have given it. May I not live to see you break it? You owe no debt beyond that. I will take care of the circle, and see to Mathrin Gallienne. You will wed Pell." I wept into the hem of her dress.
Addie was silent, staring into the fire, lost in the memories. Zed lifted an eyebrow.
"Well, did you wed your love?"
"Yes,"
she whispered in her soft rasp. She took the spoon off its hook and stirred the stew while Zed watched her. At last she hung it back in place.
"For 3 months I thought life be beyond bliss."
Her mouth worked soundlessly as she stared into nothingness. Zed put an arm around her shoulder and gently led her back to the table.
"Sit, Addie. Let me bring you a cup of tea."
She was still sitting, her hands folded together on the table, staring off when he returned with the steaming cups. He placed one in her thin hands as he sat opposite her. He didn't press her to go on before she was ready. At last, she did.
"One day, the day of my birth and 19 years, Pell and I had taken a walk in the country. I be with child."
She lifted the cup in both hands and took a sip.
"We spent the day walking past farms, thinking of names for our child, holding hands and, well, you know the foolishness of love at that age. On our way back, we had to walk past the Chora Mill just outside of town. I thought it strange no one be there. Someone always be at the mill."
Addie closed her eyes for a moment, and then took another sip of tea.
"As it turned out, there be people there. The blood of the fold. They be waiting for us."
Zed knew of them. In the larger cities of Nicobarese, the blood of the fold were an organized corps of men who hunted banelings, rooted out evil, as they saw it. In other lands, there were men like them, who went by other names, but they were the same. None were especially picky about proof. A corpse was the only proof they need show of their job well done. If they said the body was that of a baneling, then it was. In the smaller towns, the blood were usually self-appointed toughs and thugs. The blood of the fold were widely feared, with good reason.
"They took us,"
her voice broke, but only that once,
"into separate rooms in the bottom of the mill. It be dark and smelled of the damp stone walls and grain dust. I did not know what be done to Pell. I be almost too terrified to breathe. Mathrin Gallienne said Pell and I be banelings. He said I would not wed, as I should have, because I wished to bring the keeper's notice to Chora. There be a sickness, a fever, in the country that summer, and it brought death to many a family. Mathrin Gallienne said Pell and I brought the sickness. I denied it be so and spoke the oath to show proof."
Addie turned the cup in her fingers as she stared at it. Zed touched her hand.
"Drink, Addie. It will help you."
He had put a pinch of cloud leaf into her tea to help relax her. She took a long swallow.
Matherin Galleon, said Pell, and I be banelings, and the graveyard be full of the proof of that. He said he wanted only for Pell and I to tell the truth, to confess. The other men of the blood be growling like hounds around a rabbit ready to tear us apart. I be terrified for Pell. As they beat me, I knew they would be doing worse to him, to make him name me a baneling. Nothing be better for the blood than to have someone name a loved one as a baneling. They would not listen when I denied it.
She looked up into his eyes.
They would not listen.
Anything you said, Zed offered quietly, would have made no difference, Addie. It wouldn't have mattered. When you are in a leg-hole trap, reasoning with the steel does no good.
She nodded.
I know.
Her face was a calm mask over a thunderhead.
I could have stopped it had I used the gift. But it'd be against everything I'd be taught, believed. It'd be as if using the gift would prove to myself that what the men said be true. I felt it would have been blasphemy against the Creator. I'd be as helpless while the men beat me as if I did not have the gift.
She drained the tea from her cup.
Even as I screamed, I could hear Pell's screams echoing from another room.
Zed went to the fire and brought the pot back, filling her cup again.
It wasn't your fault, Addie. Don't blame yourself.
She flicked a glance up at him as he poured himself another cup.
They wanted me to name Pell as a baneling. I told them I would not, that they could kill me. But they could not make me say that it be so. Matherin bent close to me, put his face close to mine. In my head I can still see his smile. He said, I believe you, girl. But it doesn't matter, because it not be you we want to name the baneling. It be Pell we want to speak the name of the baneling. It be you we want Pell to name. You be the baneling. Then the men held me down. Matherin tried to pour something down my throat. It burned my mouth. He held my nose. It be swallow or drown. I wished to drown, but I swallowed without wanting to. It burned my throat like swallowing fire. I could not speak. I could not make a sound. I could not even scream. No sound be there, only burning pain, more pain than I had ever known.
She took a sip of tea, as if to soothe her throat.
Then the men took me in the room with Pell and tied me to a chair in front of him. Matherin held me by my hair so I could not move. It broke my heart to see what they had done to my Pell. His face be white as snow. They had cut off most of his fingers, one knuckle at a time.
Her own fingers tightened around her cup as she stared into the vision.
Matherin told Pell that I had confessed that Pell be a baneling. Pell's eyes be big, looking at me. I tried to scream that it not be true, but no sound came. I tried to shake my head that it not be true, but Matherin held me so I could not. Pell told them he did not believe them. They cut off another finger. They told him they only do it because I named him. Only do it on my word. Pell kept his eyes on me as he shook, and kept telling them he did not believe them. They told Pell I had told him I wished him to be killed because he be a baneling. Still, Pell said he did not believe them. He said he loved me. Then he told Pell I had named him a baneling, and that if it not be so, I could deny it, and they would let us both go free. He told Pell that I had promised I would not deny it, because he be a baneling, and I wanted him to die for it. Pell screamed for me to tell them, screamed for me to deny it. He screamed my name, screamed for me to say something. I tried, but I could say nothing. My throat be fire, my voice did not work. Matherin held me by my hair, I could not move. Pell's eyes be big as he stared at me, as I sat silent. Then Pell spoke to me. How could you do that to me, Addie? How could you name me a baneling? Then he cried. Matherin asked him to name me a baneling. He said that if he did, they would believe him over me because I had the gift, and he would be freed. Belle whispered, I will not say that of her to save my life, even though she has betrayed me. Those words broke my heart.
As she stared off at nothing, Zed noticed a candle on the counter behind her melt into a puddle. He could feel the waves of power radiating from her. He realized he was holding his breath. He eased it out.
Mathrin cut Pell's throat, she said simply. He severed Pell's head and held it before me. He said he wanted me to see what following the Keeper had brought on Pell. He said it'd be the last thing he wanted me to ever see. The men held my head back and pulled my eyes open. Mathrin poured the burning liquid in them. I'd be blinded. In that moment, something happened inside me. My Pell was gone. He died thinking I had betrayed him. My life was about to end. I suddenly realized how it would be my fault for holding to an oath. The life of my love, for an ignorant oath, for a foolish superstition. Nothing mattered anymore. Everything be gone to me. I turned the gift loose, turned the rage loose. I broke my oath not to use the gift to harm another. I could not see, but I could hear. I could hear their blood hit the stone walls. I struck out wildly. I shredded every living thing in that room, be it man or mouse. I could not see, so I simply struck at any life I could feel. I could not tell if any had escaped. In a way, I'd be glad I'd be blind. Or seeing what I'd be doing, I might have stopped before I finished. When all be still, dead, I felt my way around the room, counting the bodies. One be missing. I crawled to my grandmother Lindell's. How I made my way, I cannot imagine except to think the gift guided me. When she saw me, she be furious. She pulled me to my feet and demanded to know if I had broken my oath.
Zed leaned forward.
But you couldn't speak. How did you answer?
Addie smiled a small, cold smile.
I picked her up by the throat with the power of the gift and slammed her against the wall. I walked up to her and nodded my head. I squeezed her throat in anger. She fought me. She fought me with all her power. But I be stronger, much stronger. I never knew until that moment that the gift be different in different people. She be as helpless as a stick doll. But I could not hurt her as much as I wished to for asking that question before any other. I released her and sagged to the floor. I could stand no longer. She came to me and began tending to my wounds. She told me I had done wrong by breaking my oath, but that what was done to me was a more grievous wrong. I never feared Grandmother Lindell again, not because she be helping me, but because I had broken the oath. I be beyond the laws that I had been taught, and because I knew I was stronger than she. From that day on, she be afraid of me. I think she helped me because she wanted me well so I could leave. A few days later, Grandmother Lindell came home to tell me that she had been called before the King's Circle and questioned. She said all the men at the mill, all the blood of the fold be dead except Mathrin. He had escaped. She told the Circle she had not seen me. They believed her, or said they did, because they did not want to confront her, and additionally a sorceress who had killed that many men in such a shocking manner. So they let her go about her business.
Some of the tension seemed to ease from her shoulders. She studied the teacup a moment, and then took another sip. She held the cup out for him to warm. Zed poured a little more. He idly wished he had put some of the powdered cloud leaf in his own tea. He didn't think that was the end of the story.
I lost my child, Addie said in a soft rasp.
Zed looked up.
I'm sorry, Addie.
She looked up to meet his eyes.
I know.
She took one of his hands in both hers after he set down the kettle.
I know.
She took her hands back.
My throat healed.
She touched her fingers lightly to her neck, then knitted them together.
But it left me with a voice like dragging iron over rock.
He smiled at her.
I like your voice. Iron fits the rest of you.
The ghost of a smile passed across her face.
My eyes, though, did not grow better. I be blind. Grandmother Lindell not be as strong as me, but she be old, and had seen many a trick with a gift. She taught me to see without my eyes. She taught me to see with a gift. It not be the same as eyes, but in some ways it be better. In some ways I see more. After I be healed, Grandmother Lindell wanted me to leave. She not be fond of living with one who had broken the oath, even though I be of her blood. She feared I would bring trouble. Whether from the keeper for breaking my oath or from the blood of the foal, she did not know, but she feared trouble would come because of me.
Zed leaned back in his chair, stretching his tense muscles a bit.
And did trouble come?
Oh, yes,
Addie hissed, raising her eyebrows as she leaned forward.
Trouble came. Mathrin Gallian brought them. 20 blood of the fold. Ones paid by the crown, professionals. Battle-hard men, big men, grim-faced, savage men, all pretty on horseback in neat ranks with swords, shields and banners, every spear held just so at the same angle. All pretty in their chainmail and polished breastplates, shining with the embossed crest of the crown, and all wearing helmets with red plumes that flicked as they rode, every horse white. I stood on the porch and watched with the eyes of the gift as they spread rank before me with perfect precision, like they be performing for the king himself. Every horse put every foot the same, stopping in a line at the lifting of a finger from the commander. They be spread out before me, ready, eager to do their grisly duty. Mathrin waited behind them on his horse, watching. The commander called out to me, "You be under arrest as a baneling, and are to be executed as such."
Addie lifted her head from the specters of her memory, her eyes meeting Zed's.
I thought of Pell, my Pell.
Her expression hardened into an iron mask.
Not one sword cleared a scabbard, not one spear be leveled, not one foot touched the ground before they died. I swept the line from left to right, one man at a time, everything I had into each in turn, quick as a thought. Thump, thump, thump. Every one, except the commander. He sat still and stone-faced upon his white horse, his men in armor crashed to the ground to each side of him. When it be finished, when the last shield had clattered into silence, I met his eyes. Armor, I told him, be of no use against a true baneling or a sorceress. It only be of use against innocent people. Then I told him he was to deliver a message to the king for me from one sorceress named Addie. In a calm, firm voice, he asked the message. I said, tell him that if he sends another of the blood of the foal to take me, it will be the last living order he ever gives. He looked at me for a moment without a hint of emotion in his cold eyes, and then he turned his horse and walked it away without looking back.
Her gaze sank to the table.
My grandmother turned her back to me. She told me to leave the shelter of her roof and never return.
A little wince touched Zed's face before he caught it, at the thought of a sorceress with enough power to kill men in that fashion. It was exceedingly rare for a sorceress to be that strong in the gift.
What of Mathrin? You didn't kill him?
She shook her head. A humorless smile played across her lips.
No, I took him with me.
Took him with you?
I bonded him to me, bonded his life to mine. Bonded him so that he always knew where I be, and so that every new moon he was compelled to come to me, no matter where I be, no matter what he wished. He had to follow me, at least close enough, so that he could come to me every new moon.
Frowning, Zed studied the dregs in his teacup.
I met a man once in Winstead, the capital and crown seat of Kelton. His name was Mathrin. He was a beggar, missing the fingers on one hand, as I recall. He was blind. His eyes had been...
Zed's eyes suddenly fixed on hers. She was watching him.
His eyes had been gouged out.
Addie nodded.
Indeed they had.
Her face was iron again.
Every new moon he came to me and I cut something off him, letting his screams try to fill the emptiness in me.
Zed leaned back, his hands pressed to the tabletop.
Iron indeed. So you made a new home in Kelton?
No, I made no home. I traveled, seeking out women with a gift, ones who could help me in my studies. No one knew very much of what I sought, but each knew at least a little that others did not. Mathrin followed, and every new moon he came to me, and I cut something else from him. I wanted him to live forever, to suffer forever. He be the one who beat me, down there with his fists, so I would lose Pell's child. He be the one who killed Pell. He be the one who blinded me.
Her white eyes shone red in the lamplight as she stared off again.
He be the one who made Pell believe I had betrayed him. I wanted Mathrin Gallien to suffer forever.
Zed gestured vaguely with his hand.
How long did he last?
Addie sighed.
Not long enough and too long.
Zed frowned.
One day, a thought occurred to me. I had never used the gift to prevent Mathrin from killing himself. Why would he still come to me? Let me make him to suffer like I did? Why would he not simply end it? So the next time he came and I cut something else off, I also cut the bond. Cut his need to come the next time. But I did it in a way so as he would not notice. So he could simply forget about me if he wished.
And was that the last you saw of him?
She gave a grim shake of her head.
No, I thought it would be, but he returned with the next new moon. Returned when he needn't have. It made my blood run cold to wonder why. I decided that it'd be time for him to pay with his life for what he had done to me and Pell and all the others. But I resolved that before he gave me his life, he would give me the answer. In my travels I had learned many things, things for which I thought I would never have use. That night I found use. I used them to learn what torture Mathrin feared above all others. The trick be used to learn fears, but be useless to learn other secrets. Against his will, the words tumbled out of him, his fear spilled out. I left him to sweat all that night and the whole next day while I went in search of the things I needed, the things he feared above all else. When I finally returned with them, he be nearly insane with fright. His fears be well-founded. I asked him to confess his secret. He said no. I dumped out the sack, put the little cages and the other things in front of him as he sat naked and helpless on the floor. I picked up each, held it before his sightless face and described it, told him what be in each little cage or basket or jar. Again I asked him to confess. He be sweating and panting and shaking, but he said no. Mathrin thought I be bluffing, that I did not have the courage. Mathrin be wrong. I steeled myself and brought his worst fears to life for him.
Zed's brow bunched up into wrinkles. Curiosity won out over dread.
What did you do?
She lifted her head to look into his eyes.
That be the one thing I will not tell you. It not be important anyway. Mathrin would not talk and suffered so much that I almost stopped several times. Each time I wanted to stop, I thought about the last thing my eyes had seen before he blinded me. Pell's head held in Mathrin's fist before me.
Addie swallowed, her voice so low Zed could hardly hear her.
And I remembered Pell's last words. I will not say that of her to save my life, even though she has betrayed me.
She closed her eyes for a moment. They came open, and she went on.
Mathrin be on the edge of death. I thought he was not going to tell me why he came to me. But just before he died, he became still, despite what was being done to him. And then he said he would tell me, because he be about to die, because this too had been by plan. I asked him again why he had come back. He leaned toward me. Don't you know, Addie? He asked me. Don't you know what I be? I be a baneling. I have been hiding right under your nose all this time. You have kept me near you all this time, and the keeper knew right where you be. The keeper lusts for those with the gift above all else. I had thought that that be it, that he be a baneling. I told him he had failed. It had done him no good, as he be about to die for his crimes. He smiled at me.
She leaned forward.
Smiled! And he said, You be wrong, Addie. I have not failed. I have done the keeper's bidding. I have fulfilled my task perfectly. All this be by plan. I have made you do exactly as he wished. I shall be rewarded. I be the one who started the fire when you be little. I be the one who did those things to Pell, not because I thought him or you be a baneling. I be the baneling. I did it to make you break your oath, to make you welcome the keeper's hate into your heart. Breaking your oath be the first step, and look what you have done since. Look at what you be doing right now. Look at how far you have slipped toward him. You be within his grasp now. You may not have given him your oath, but you do his bidding. You have become what you hate. You have become me. You be a baneling. The keeper smiles upon you, Addie, and thanks you for welcoming him into your heart. Matherin slumped and fell back, dead.
Addie dissolved into tears, her head sagging into her hands. Zed unlocked his joints and swept around the table, holding her to him as he stood next to her, holding her head against his stomach, stroking her hair, comforting her as she cried.
Not so, dear lady, not so at all.
She wept against his robes, shaking her head.
You think you be so smart, wizard? You not be so smart as you think? You be wrong about this.
Zed knelt beside her chair, holding her hands in his, looking up into her stricken face.
I'm smart enough to know that the keeper, or one of his minions, would not let you have the satisfaction of knowing you had won a battle against him. But you fought back. You struck out from your hurt, not for a lust for the things you did, not for a want to help the keeper.
Her brow wrinkled together with her effort to stop the tears.
You be so sure, sure enough, to trust one such as I?
Zed smiled. I'm sure. I may not know everything, but I know you are no baneling. You are the victim, not the criminal.
She shook her head.
I not be so sure as you.
After Matherin died, did you go on killing, seeking vengeance against any innocent?
No, of course not.
Had you been an agent, you would have given yourself over to the keeper, to his wishes, and gone on to hurt those who fought him. You are no baneling, dear lady. My heart weeps for the things the keeper took from you, but he did not take your soul. That is still yours. Put those fears aside.
He held her hands and gave them soft squeezes. She didn't try to take her hands back, but let them stay in his, as if to soak up the comfort as they trembled. Addie wiped the tears from her cheek.
Pour me some more tea, but no more powdered cloud leaf, or I will fall asleep before I can finish the story.
Zed arched an eyebrow. She had known what he had done. He patted her shoulder as he rose to his feet. He poured her tea and then pulled his chair forward and sat again while she sipped. As she drank half of her cup, she looked to have regained her control.
The war with Dahara be burning hot, but it be near the end. I felt the boundary go up, felt it come into this world.
So you came here right after the boundary went up?
No. I studied with a few women first. Some taught me a few things about bones.
She pulled a little necklace from under her robes. She fingered the small round bone with red and yellow beads to each side. It was just like the one she had given him to get him through the pass. He still wore it around his neck.
This be a bone from the base of a skull, like that on the shelf over there. The one that fell on the floor. The beast be called a Skryn. Skryn be guardian beasts to the underworld, something like the Harthounds, except they guard in both directions. The best way to explain it is that they be part of the veil, though that not be accurate. In this world, they be solid, have form, but in the other, they be only a force.
Zed frowned.
Force?
Addie held out her spoon and let it drop on the table.
Force? We cannot see it, but force be there. It makes the spoon drop and keeps it from flying up into the air. It cannot be seen, but it be there. Something like that with the Skryn. On rare occasions, in their duty to repel all from the cusp where the world of the living and the world of the dead touch, they be pulled into this world. Few people know of them because it so rarely happens.
Zed was frowning.
It be very complex. I will explain it better another time. The important thing be that this bone from the Skryn hides you from them.
Addie took a sip of her tea while Zed pulled his necklace out of his robes, taking a new look at it.
And it must hide you from other beasts, too, to get through the pass?
She nodded.
How did you know about the pass? I put the boundary up, and I didn't know the pass existed.
She turned the teacup around and around in her fingers.
After I left my grandmother, I sought out women with the gift, women who could teach me things about the world of the dead. After Matherin died, I studied harder, with more urgency. Each woman could tell me only what small bit she knew, but they usually knew one who knew more. I traveled the Midlands, going among them, gathering knowledge. I collected all those bits of knowledge, piecing them together. In this manner, I learned a little of how the worlds interact. By putting up a boundary across parts of this world, it'd be a little like stoppering up a tea kettle and then putting it on the fire. Without a vent, something will blow off. I knew that if there be magic wise enough to know how to bring the underworld into this, it must have a way to equalize each side of the boundary, a vent of some sort, a pass.
Zed lifted an eyebrow, staring off into his thoughts as he drew his thumb down his chin.
Of course, that makes sense. Balance. All force, all magic must be balanced.
He focused his eyes on her.
When I brought up the boundary, I was using magic I didn't fully understand. It was in an ancient book from the wizards of old who had more power than I can fathom. Using their instructions to bring up the boundary was an act of desperation. It'd be hard for me to imagine you being desperate. Sometimes that's all life is, one desperate act after another.
Addie nodded.
Perhaps you be right. I was desperate to hide from the Keeper. I remembered what Mathrin had said. He be hiding right under my nose. I reasoned that the safest place for me to hide from the Keeper would be where he wouldn't look, right under his nose, right at the edge of his world. So I came to the pass. The pass did not be this world, yet it did not be the underworld either. It be a mix of both, a place where both worlds boil together a little bit. With the bones, I be able to hide from the Keeper. He and the beasts from his world could not see me.
Hide?
The woman had more iron in her than the kettle hanging on the fire. If he knew Addie, there was more to it. Zed gave her a stern stare.
You came here simply to hide?
She averted her eyes as she fingered the small, round bone on her necklace, and then at last tucked it back into her robes.
There be another reason. I made an oath to myself. I swore I would find a way to contact my Pell to tell him I did not betray him.
She took a long swallow of tea.
I have spent most of my life here in the past trying to find a way to reach into the world of the dead to tell him. The past be part of that world.
Zed pushed at his cup with a finger.
The boundary. The pass is gone, Addie. I need your help in this world.
She laid her arms on the table.
When you grew my foot back for me, it brought back everything that had happened, made it fresh, as if I'd be reliving it. It made me remember some things I had forgotten for a long time. It made me remember hurts that still be there, though time has dimmed them.
I'm sorry, Addie, he whispered. I should have taken your past into consideration, but I didn't suspect you would live through that much pain. Forgive me.
There be nothing to forgive. You gave me a gift by giving me my foot back. You did not know the things I have done. It not be your fault I did them. You did not know I be a bingling.
He cast her a harsh glance.
You think that because you have fought back against wickedness, you have become wicked?
I have done worse than a man like you can understand.
Zed nodded slightly.
Is that so? Let me tell you a little story. I had a love once like your Pell. Her name was Erilyn. My time with her was like your time with Pell.
A slow smile came to his lips as his memory touched the mist of those pleasant times. The smile withered.
Until Panis Rawl sent a quad after her.
Addie reached out and laid a hand on his.
Zed, you do not need to.
Zed brought his other fist down on the table, making the cups jump.
You can't imagine what the four of them did to her.
He leaned forward, his face standing out red against his white hair. He ground his teeth together.
I hunted them down. What I did to each one of them would make whatever you did to Mathrin seem a lark. I went after Panis Rawl, but couldn't reach him. So I went after his armies. For every man you killed, Addie, I killed 1,000. Even my own side feared me. I was the wind of death. I did what was needed to stop Panis Rawl, and maybe more.
He settled his weight back in his chair.
If there is such a thing as a man of virtue, you do not sit with him now.
You did only what you had to. That does not diminish your virtue.
He arched an eyebrow.
Wise words. Spoken by a wise woman. Perhaps you should listen to them,
She remained silent. He put his elbows on the table and idly picked up the cup, rolling it in his palms as he went on.
In a way, I was luckier than you. I had more time with my Erilyn, and I didn't lose my daughter.
Panis Rall did not try to kill your daughter, too?
Yes, indeed, he thought he had. I cast a death spell to make them think they had seen her death. It was the only way to protect her, to keep them from trying until they succeeded.
A death spell?
Eddie whispered a benediction in her native tongue.
That be a dangerous web. I would not reproach you for doing such a thing. You had cause. But such a thing does not go unnoticed by the spirits. You be lucky it worked, and it saved her. You be very fortunate the good spirits be with you on that day.
I guess sometimes it's hard to tell which side of luck you're looking at. I raised her without a mother. She had grown into a fine young woman when it happened.
Darkenrall had been standing next to his father when I sent the wizard's fire through the boundary. He was standing next to his father when my fire found him. Some of it burned Darkenrall. He spent his growing years learning so he could finish what his father had started and extract his vengeance. He knew how to cross the boundary. He was coming into the Midlands, and I never knew. He raped my daughter. He didn't know who she was. Everyone thought my daughter was dead, or he would have killed her, sure. But he hurt her.
He pressed his palms together. The cup shattered. He turned his hands up to see if they had been cut, and was a little surprised they weren't. Addie said nothing.
After that, I took her to Westland to hide to protect her. I never knew if it was more of that bad luck or if somehow wickedness had found her, but she died, burned to death in her house. Though I always suspected the irony was more than coincidence, I never found proof it was so. Perhaps, after all, the good spirits hadn't been with me on the day I cast her death spell.
I be sorry, Zed, Addie said in a soft rasp.
He waved off her pity with a flourish of his hand.
I still had her boy.
With the side of his finger, he pushed the shards of the cup into a little pile in the center of the wooden tabletop.
Darkenrall's son, the spawn of an agent of the Keeper. But my daughter's son, too. And my grandson, innocent of the crimes that brought him to be a fine boy.
He looked up at her from under his bushy eyebrows.
I believe you know him. His name is Richard.
Addie lurched forward in her chair.
Richard? Richard is your...
She leaned back, shaking her head.
Wizards and their secrets.
She scowled a little, but then softened her expression.
Perhaps you had just cause for a secret such as this. Does Richard have the gift?
Zed lifted his eyebrows as he nodded. Indeed he does. That was one reason I hid him in Westland. I feared he had the gift, though I wasn't sure, and I wanted him to be safe from danger. As you said, the Keeper lusts for those with a gift more than any other. I knew that if I began teaching him, used magic very much myself, the gaze of danger would settle on him. I wanted to let him grow, to become strong of character before I tested him, and if he had the gift, taught him. I had always suspected he had the gift. Sometimes I hoped he did not. But I now know he does. He used it to stop Darkenrall, used magic.
He leaned forward.
I suspect he has the gift from both his grandfather and his father, from two different lines of wizards.
I see, was all she said.
But we have more important things to worry about right now. Darkenrall used the boxes of Ordin. He opened one, the wrong one for him anyway. But maybe the wrong one for us too. There are books back at the keep that speak of it. They warn that if the boxes are used, if the magic of Ordin is used, and even if the person who put them in play makes a mistake and it kills him, it can still tear the veil. Addie, I don't know as much about the underworld as you. You have been studying it most of your life. I need your help. I need you to come to Aidendrill with me to study the books to see what can be done. I've read many of them and don't understand much of their meaning. Perhaps you will. Even if you only see one thing I miss, it could be important.
She stared at the table with a bitter expression.
I be an old woman, I be an old woman who has welcomed the keeper into my heart?"
Zed watched her, but she didn't meet his eyes. He pushed his chair back and stood.
"An old woman? No. A foolish woman, maybe."
She didn't reply. Her gaze stayed pointedly on the table. Zed strolled across the room and inspected the bones hanging on the wall. He clasped his hands behind his back as he studied the talismans of the dead.
"Maybe I am just an old man, then, hmm? A foolish old man. Maybe I should let a young man do this work."
He glanced over his shoulder. She was watching him.
"But if a young man is good, then even younger would be better. In fact, why not let a child do it? That would be better yet. Maybe there is a 10-year-old boy somewhere who will be willing to do something to stop the dead from swallowing the living."
He threw his hands up in the air.
"According to you, it would seem knowledge is of no use, only youth. Now you are being foolish, old man. You know what I mean."
Zed stepped back to the table and gave a shrug of his bony shoulders.
"If you just sit here in this house instead of helping with what you know, then you might as well be the thing you fear most, an agent of the keeper."
He put his knuckles to the table and glowered as he leaned over her.
"If you don't fight him, then you help him. That is what his plan has been all along, not to turn you to him, but to make you fear stopping him."
She looked into his eyes, uneasiness stealing into her expression.
"What do you mean? He has already done all he needed, Addie. He made you afraid of yourself. The keeper has an eternity of patience. He doesn't need you to work for him. It takes effort to turn one with a gift. You weren't worth the trouble. He needed only for you not to work against him. He did all that was necessary. He didn't waste an effort to do more. In some ways, he is as blind to this world as we are to his. He has only so much influence here. He must choose his tasks carefully. He doesn't spend what power he has here frivolously."
Realization took the place of unease.
"Perhaps you not be such an old fool."
Zed smiled as he pulled the chair forward and sat.
"That has always been my opinion."
Hands nestled in her lap, Addie studied the tabletop, as if hoping it would come to her aid. The house was silent, except for the slow crackle of the fire in the hearth.
"All these years, the truth be hiding right under my nose."
She lifted her head, giving him a puzzled frown.
"How did you come to be so wise?"
Zed shrugged.
"But one of the advantages of having lived so long, you view yourself as just an old woman. I see a striking dear lady who has learned much in her time in this world, and has gained wisdom from what she has seen."
He pulled the yellow rose from her hair and held it before her.
"Your loveliness is not a mask layered over a rotten core. It blossoms.